Inhuman, The Monster of Cleveland is a podcast that uses adult language and discusses sensitive and potentially triggering topics, including violence and abuse. This podcast may not be appropriate for younger audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, what's up, you guys? I'm Andrea.
And I'm Haley.
And you're listening to Inhuman, The Monster of Cleveland. Like I was more confident that time.
You were. It was really good. It sounded more just like you weren't like, it wasn't like scripted. You were, that was, yeah, good.
I was practicing while I was pooping.
You have to be careful what you say because I have the editing power here and I can include, oh, yeah, anything I want.
That's no, fine. I have no shame.
Oh, okay. That's funny. All right, you guys. Well, welcome back. I'm excited for this episode. We're going to be covering their last year in the house. But before we get into it, we did want to announce that we officially have like an end number / date of episodes. We didn't really know like how many episodes we were going to do exactly in this case. We kind of had like a general outline, but we weren't sure, but we officially know it is going to be 12 episodes, and the last episode is going to probably be something a little bit different, but I don't want to say much more since we don't have it 100% planned out.
Right. Everything just unfolded so fast, and we just are a well of knowledge over here, so we just want to give you guys all the deets, and we don't want to leave anything out and like do the girls justice, which is kind of the whole point of us doing this podcast.
Right, exactly. So yeah, this is episode 8 and there will be 12 total. So 9, 10, 11, 12. So 4 more after this one.
Yes.
And then after that, we're going to be covering some other stuff and hopefully season 2 will be coming out in August.
Yes, we're so excited. We have fun stuff planned. Well, it's not fun because it's, you know, terrible, horrible subject matter, right, but fun for us because we love doing this and it's like researching and I don't know, we both really enjoy that, so fun in, yeah, that aspect.
Yeah. All right, should we get into the episode?
Yeah, let's go ahead and dive right in. So I think we ended last episode 7 with Amanda and Jocelyn's life, and mostly Jocelyn's life, and I guess I just wanted to start this off. You guys already know that Michelle, you know, had some miscarriages while she was in the horrible house of horrors. But Michelle actually suffered 5 forced miscarriages while she was in captivity. When Amanda's daughter, Jocelyn, was about 5 years old, Michelle realized that she was once again pregnant. This time she made sure to keep it hidden as long as possible just because, you know, he had abused her to the point of losing all the other babies. Which is just so tragic.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I mean, it is. It's like it's bad enough that he was doing that and then Amanda got pregnant and he didn't do that to her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that must have just broken Michelle even more, mm-hmm, than it already had, just suffering through all of that already and then seeing him let Amanda go through with it and like, yeah.
Yeah. I don't, like, we'll never understand what the, I guess, pathology of that is. I don't even know if that's the right term, but
yeah.
He was just, nothing he did made sense.
No.
So after about 3 months, she suspected that Castro was onto her because he again began starving her. When he did finally feed her, he brought home a hot dog with mustard, knowing full and well that Michelle was deathly allergic, as I had mentioned in her episode about her life before captivity. But Michelle ate it because she was so hungry and, I mean, she was literally starving. I don't know how long it was before she actually was fed, but, you know, she was famished to the point that she would have ate something that could possibly kill her. She tried to wipe it off, like, on her shirt as much as she could, but, you know, with allergies, like, there cannot even be an inkling of anything, you know, near it, because you can have a reaction. And she had, instantly, she had a terrible reaction to the mustard.
Wow.
Yeah. She suffered for over 5 days, and Castro did absolutely nothing, which,
That's so scary. Mm-hmm. Like, allergies are can be so serious, and, like, that could have killed her.
Yeah. And she had to have an EpiPen, I'm pretty sure, because her mustard allergy was so severe.
And how would that, like, lose – how would he think that that would lead to her losing the baby? Like –
I guess at that point, he just didn't even care if Michelle lived or died. You know, like we mentioned, you know, he was starting to get more loose with the girls, or, you know, whatever, and was not caring as much about, like, keeping them, you know, under lock and key every second of the day. But
yeah,
I feel like he knew his days were numbered, and I just don't think he ever cared about her at all. Like, from day one, he just never cared about Michelle. So he didn't care if she lived or died. And I don't even know why he fed her, because, I mean, he seemed to hate her so much. Like, I'm glad he did, obviously, because
yeah,
starving is, you know, it's awful.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, if he wanted to get rid of the baby, like, why feed her something she's allergic to? Like, that just doesn't even make sense. Like,
well, he's a moron. Like, he's not educated. Yeah. Like, he's calculated. He's, you know, calculated and cruel and all those things. But at the end of the day, he's uneducated. So he probably thought, like, oh, this mustard allergy that she supposedly has will probably do, you know, the trick, I guess you could say.
Yeah. What an idiot.
Yeah. So, Gina tried to nurse Michelle back to health the best that she could, but, you know, unfortunately, it just had to run its course. Michelle stated in her book that she saw God while she was in and out of consciousness, suffering from this allergic reaction, and that he saved her from death. She still, to this day, didn't understand why God allowed so much heartache in her life, but she felt him at that point in time and knew that she would never doubt him again. She actually did not end up losing the baby at that time, and she was nursed back to health eventually, and she was shocked that she was still pregnant, but she was so thankful too.
Wow. So it didn't even work.
Right. Which, I mean, it, you know, I'm not a doctor or nurse, but I would assume that it wouldn't work either. I would think that it could possibly kill her, which would, you know, take care of, you know, quote unquote, as he would say, take care of the problem, but I wouldn't just think it would cause her to miscarry. I mean, our bodies are pretty tough, and, like, you can go through some things when you're pregnant and the baby be completely fine.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. Yeah. So I'm assuming he ended up, though, finding a different way.
Oh, well, yeah, we'll get to that. It's pretty disgusting, but.
Okay. So we've talked about before how Castro, I think kind of more earlier on, but he would give the girls money after assaulting them. Like, he would throw singles at them as if he was in a strip club, like, which is just so fucking disgusting, because he's forcing them, he's assaulting them, and then, like, paying them for their service.
They're not sex workers.
No. But he would also give them money randomly, like, after doing housework. And Gina did a lot of the housework because she liked that it kept her busy. Gina remembers him one time saying, quote, "You're going to need the money when you get out." Like, he always made comments like that. Like, he always made comments to Amanda, too, about, like, when you get out, this, or when I let you out. And it's like, just stop.
He probably knew he was going to get caught. I mean, there's only so long before something. I mean, yeah, obviously people are in captivity for decades sometimes, but.
Yeah. And I think that caught. This was. Yeah, exactly. And I think this was one of the ways he kind of turned his feelings around to, like, make himself feel less guilty, because he was like, I'm going to let them out and I'm helping them so that they'll be okay when they get out. Mm-hmm. And I really think that, like, half of him did know how much of a monster he was. And he was always trying to do things to make that better. Like, he really, I think, part of him thought that it was all consensual, but then another part of him knew that it was all wrong.
Yeah.
So Gina talked about how she would save the money and spend it on special things. And in April 2012, she did the sweetest thing that melts my heart. I know we've talked about it and you've mentioned to me too, and it really is just the sweetest thing ever. So Amanda and Michelle's birthdays were both in April and Easter as well. So she decided to buy all three of them some sundresses that she had seen in a magazine. And she was actually shocked when Castro actually bought them. And so was Amanda, because he would never buy them anything that was new. It was always like old stuff, stuff he found. Like, he never bought them new things. And she said, because he couldn't do anything right, he got them the wrong sizes. Wow. But Gina actually ended up hemming them, and she made like headbands with the extra fabric. And like, that's just so pure. Like, as much terrible shit that they've been through, they are so resilient and strong. And like, she was able to do that, and it made her feel better. And I'm sure it made the other girls feel better too.
Right. And that was so selfless of her, because I mean, obviously she didn't know what the outcome was going to be, but maybe one day she was going to get out and need that money. And, you know, for her to, right, to be so selfless and buy them, it made me, when I read the book, or Michelle's book, and she's told me that, it literally made me cry, because I was just like, first of all, like, I'm so surprised that he even did that. And
yeah,
it was just, like you said, very pure, a very pure gesture.
Yeah. And it's like, she could have also saved the money for her, to get something for herself, or, you know, I think she had mentioned that she one time like got Chipotle with the money and stuff like that. So like, she could have saved it, but she wanted to do something for the other two.
Yeah.
So at this point, Michelle had been in the house for 10 years, Amanda for 9, and Gina for 8. Castro had told Amanda he wanted, quote, this all to end in a shootout with police, and that he knew he'd have to pay for kidnapping them. But he was afraid of going to jail. So, like, how screwed up is that?
Yeah, like, suck it. Because, like, you are too big of a nutsack, that's all I can think of, to spend time in captivity, but you've held these women for all of these years, like a decade.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you're a coward.
Yes. Yes. Coward. That's a perfect word to describe it. Mm-hmm. So on Amanda's 9th abduction anniversary, she was watching the news coverage of her story with Jocelyn. And Jocelyn later told Castro, quote, they're looking for mommy. And this made Castro so angry, because clearly Jocelyn was starting to understand what was going on and that the girls weren't there willingly. So, of course, he got so mad about this and ended up trying to like ruin the VHS tape that Amanda had multiple news stories with her family recorded on. Thankfully, he didn't ruin it completely and it was still able to run. But this was like definitely, I think, kind of the start of when he realized like Jocelyn was starting to figure it out. Yeah. She was smart. She was growing up quickly. Like, she knew something was up.
Right. And what did he think? I mean, she's what, 5 at this point? So
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
even if she didn't understand at that point, like, she eventually she would. She's just going to get older, right, and get more smart, you know?
Yeah. Ugh. And like, he would take her out so she would see like normal families and on TV and stuff. So like, mm-hmm, it's not that hard to figure out like something is different with my family.
Right.
And this is so sweet. On Amanda's birthday that year, Jocelyn saved a piece of chewing gum that she had gotten from Castro to give to Amanda as a gift. And Amanda was saying how, like, Jocelyn knew that she didn't get anything for her birthday and she just wanted her mom to be happy.
That is so like, sweet.
You know.
That is so sweet.
I know. Okay, so here's another, like, just annoying thing that Castro did. I mean, so many of the things that Amanda and Gina, and I'm sure Michelle, talk about in their books just, like, are so frustrating and, like, make me so angry. But, like, and especially, not especially, but, like, things that aren't directly related to him just assaulting them or, like, holding them captive, but just other bad stuff that he did to fuck with them, and it makes me so mad. So in May of 2012, Castro told Gina that he saw her mom passing out some missing flyers of Gina. So he stopped to ask her mom if there was anything new on the case, and he picked up one of the flyers from her. So, like, he is just rubbing in her face that he not only got to see her mom, who she missed, but he's, like, bragging about how no one knows that he has them.
Like, he's so smart. Oh, my God. Ugh.
Right. And so not only he tells her about this, but he gives her the flyer. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, here you go. Whatever. Take it. And which is just so freaking sick. But she ended up covering it in, like, hearts and photos. And she wanted to hang it up, but she actually didn't because Jocelyn didn't know her real name. Right. And she knew that it would just piss Castro off more, so she just didn't hang it up. But she did kind of, like, cling on to it. And I think it kind of gave her, like, a renewed sense of hope a little bit.
Which is funny because he was trying to do the opposite. And it actually probably put fire under her ass and made her say, yes, they're still looking for me after all this time.
Right. Yeah, you're so right. Okay, so this next part, did Michelle talk at all about the makeshift pool that Castro made for them?
No, I don't think so. I don't remember anything about, aside from the shitty little baby pool that Amanda gave birth in.
Right.
That's the only part I remember about the pool.
Right. Okay, so this was, like, in the summertime, so it was super hot. You know, they're in Ohio, so it gets, like, muggy, and I'm assuming it's very similar weather to Indiana, where I lived for 4 years, so I think it's, like, that really hot, muggy.
Right.
So Jocelyn and Amanda had both been upset that they couldn't play outside together. Like, Jocelyn always wanted her mom to come outside, and I think that was frustrating Castro. So one day, he put that same plastic pool, the one that Amanda gave birth in, wow. He took it and he put it in the back of his pickup truck and, like, surrounded it with kind of, like, what I'm picturing is, like, blue tarp that you have, you know? And he did this so nobody could see in. And Amanda, Gina, and Michelle all had to wear wigs, as they always did if they ever got to go outside. But they got to sit together in the pool, splashing and playing around. And this was basically one of the first times that they had had hours of fresh air for 10 years.
Wow.
And, like, I just can't imagine. Amanda was just describing how, like, she didn't even care that it was tight or that they had to wear the itchy wigs. Like, they were just so happy to have fresh air. And I really feel like this is kind of one of the starting indicators that Castro was kind of breaking down and feeling safer. Like, he wasn't being as careful.
Right.
I mean, he still built the tent up around it, but, you know, having them outside is dangerous. Like,
yeah, they could have been screaming. They could have, like, attacked him and ran. I mean, it's all risky, but yeah, he was definitely letting his guard down.
Yeah. So in July 2012, there's actually a major search for Amanda. An inmate in a prison had told police that he killed and buried her. So police were doing, like, a major search of the area. And I mean, this happens all the time. Like, inmates will confess stuff and, you know, police, obviously, if they believe that it's true in any inkling, they kind of have to follow the lead, especially in such a cold case. And so they were doing a major search of the area, and it was literally right nearby, like, just a few blocks away from the house. And Amanda could hear the helicopters hovering over her head, but she couldn't do anything about it.
Right.
Like, no one could see her. She couldn't scream. So instead, she just had to sit, watch the news. And she was super worried about her sister, like, thinking that they were going to find her bones. Like,
yeah,
she was just sitting there worried about how her sister was must have been feeling in that moment.
Yeah. And they probably thought that they were going to find her remains because she had been missing for so long with no indicator that she was still alive.
Right. And amazingly, in my opinion, this actually brought the girls closer together again. It was obviously really weird for Amanda to watch people searching for her. Yeah. And Gina and Michelle were kind of there supporting her through that emotional roller coaster. And then, you know, I think it kind of did bring them a little bit closer together. They went through a lot of waves, but I think that it kind of brought them closer together. And obviously, it led to nothing. The police and the FBI just ended up concluding that the inmate probably made up the story to be able to leave jail for a few days. Because, you know, they usually take the inmates to, like, show where it happened. So, I mean, most people, not most, but I'm guessing a lot of people in jail are pretty fucked up and will do anything to, like,
to get out.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I bet they do. I bet it happens a lot more than we even know about.
Yeah, I'm sure. So later that month, another girl, JC Duggard, who had been kidnapped and held for a long time in California, had been found. And so Amanda had been like hearing about it and she wanted to know more, especially because JC had multiple kids with her captor. So Castro asked her, quote, "Are you going to write a book about this?" Like, Castro knew that this was going to be over someday. Like, he knew that he wasn't going to be able to sustain this.
It probably excited him, you know?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I don't know what was going through his head during this, but it is just nuts. But this did get Amanda thinking. And I'm going to read this part directly from her book. And it's kind of long, so stick with me. But I think it's important because it kind of shows her mindset during this time. Quote, "Someday, when I get out of here, I know some people won't be able to understand why I didn't figure out how to kill him or escape. It's going to be hard to explain how fear paralyzes you. And I have Joss to worry about. If I fought back and he killed me, she would have only him to raise her, and I can't let that happen. People are also going to say there was something wrong with me because I allowed myself to get close to him. I can't help what people say, but I'm the one who went through this, and only I know what I've had to do to survive and create the best possible life for Jocelyn," end quote.
Yeah.
So I think this really shows how, one, she still had hope after 10 years in the house, and two, she had kind of come to peace with the ups and downs of, like, getting closer to him, and she was really just focused on Jocelyn. And I'm so glad that she had Jocelyn, because I think it kind of protected her, just like Michelle and Gina kind of protected each other.
Right.
You know, it just kind of gave her something to focus on. So.
Yeah.
So then Castro asked if she would tell the truth in a book if she wrote one. And Amanda said, quote, "I'm going to tell people what you did to me. I will tell them about all the rapes." And then Castro says, quote, "I never raped you."
Okay.
Are you kidding me?
He thinks, fucker.
Yeah. He thinks that these girls consented just because they weren't fighting back. And he still thinks that Amanda and all the girls, for that matter, did everything willingly. Like, that just makes me so mad.
That just shows how delusional he was. And he probably said that, but I think deep down he knew to some extent that this was so messed up.
Yeah. But I think so too.
Yeah.
All right. So jumping forward just a bit to November 6th, 2012, the day President Barack Obama was reelected. And to put this into perspective, Amanda has now missed the first 3 elections she could have voted in. Like, that's how long she has been trapped in this house.
Right.
So this same day, Castro told the girls that he got fired from his bus driving job. Finally, thank God he got fired, but this piece of shit also gets unemployment now.
Yeah.
Which I guess is good because, you know, he needed to provide food and other things for the girls and Jocelyn. And he was so excited that he got fired so he could, quote, "spend more time with Joss before this all ends." And as you can tell, Castro had been making more and more comments about how this would end. And as I said earlier, I think he kind of knew that he couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah.
He was getting more slack, maybe even like hoping to slip up and get caught.
It must have been exhausting to keep up with all of that.
Right. Because he did have like other kids and a family. And like, you know, it's not like he was a complete loner. So he had to keep up this facade.
Right.
And he even talked about what he would be called once he got caught, thinking maybe he'd be called the Cleveland Kidnapper or the Monster. And Amanda put it well, saying he was getting worn down by leading a double life and guarding this giant secret he has.
Exactly.
So, you know, and that just shows how narcissistic he was. I mean, I know other, like, especially serial killers will, like, name themselves or love seeing, like, when they're named. And he definitely had that.
They love that infamy. They want that infamy because they know they're going to get caught. So they want to go down in history as being the biggest this or the best this or the worst that or whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's sick.
So sick. It is.
So Gina at this point was really kind of starting to fall into a depression. She was just feeling like invisible, as she described it. the weight of being stuck inside while life went on around her was just sitting really heavy. And it just breaks my heart thinking about her having such a hard time after all those years of strength and resilience. Like,
yeah.
And now she's, you know, falling into a depression, which obviously I don't blame her and it doesn't surprise me, but it's just so heartbreaking that she was so strong for so many years and then now this depression was getting to her.
Yeah, I mean, you can really, as a human being, you can only be strong for so long. Like, your yeah. surroundings are going to eventually affect you, whether you want them to or not, whether you're fighting it or not.
Yeah.
So with that being said, Michelle, too, was falling into a deeper depression. As you mentioned, it was November, so Christmas was approaching, and all she could think about was Joey and how he would have been 13 that year.
Wow, 13.
I know. Can you imagine missing that much of your child's life?
No. Like, no. He was just a little baby, and he would have been a teenager.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. The only thing that she did have to look forward to was Jocelyn's birthday. And that Christmas, she turned 6. That year, much like many of the years before, Castro actually threw her a party, which kind of surprised me to some extent, just because I feel like it would be weird if he was caught like in the store buying balloons and, you know, buying a cake True. And stuff like that. So that part did kind of like strike me a little bit. But I am glad that he, you know, had enough decency to do that for his, you know, his daughter. I hate to even call her that because he doesn't deserve that.
Yeah. But I feel like he was starting to get more lenient, because even when Jocelyn was first born, he didn't want to go and buy like formula and diapers right. and stuff. So he was like careful at first, but he was kind of like definitely getting worn down, and he just loved Jocelyn so much that he probably was like, oh, I'll just risk it for her because I love her so much. She's everything, right. like, which is just annoying, but yeah.
So while Castro, Gina, and Amanda were downstairs decorating for the party, Michelle was not allowed to come downstairs. But eventually he made Michelle come downstairs. But he told her that she wasn't a part of this and that she didn't matter.
Why? He always treated Michelle like this. Like, she was always kind of his punching bag, I feel
right.
like.
But, yeah.
God damn.
Yeah. So they had decorated the kitchen with balloons. Castro had bought a cake, as I mentioned before. And they all sang happy birthday to Jocelyn. And she actually, in her book, like, she wrote out the happy birthday song, and I just thought that was so Aww. Cute because she really did love Jocelyn. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I know they all did, and of course Amanda did, that's her child, but you know, she was such a bright spot in such a dark space that it was impossible for them not to love her.
Yeah.
Aww. I know. And again, it was like a sliver of normalcy in this dire fucked up situation. However, after the party, everyone but Michelle was allowed to go upstairs. Castro pointed towards the basement, and Michelle reluctantly complied. And I'm just going to go ahead and give you another trigger warning. This next part is really, really, really hard to tell and to hear. And I'm going to try not to lose it. But while Michelle was walking down the stairs, I'm already crying. while Michelle was walking down the stairs, Castro shoved her and she fell violently down to the bottom of the stairs. He shouted at Michelle, "It's time to deal with this. I'm going to fix you so you can never have another kid." Because remember, at this point, I mean, Michelle is like 3 months pregnant. He then proceeded to kick her in the stomach, and he kicked her over and over and over again. Michelle pleaded with him to stop, and he did not. He then left the basement and left Michelle lying there sobbing, balled up into a knot, hoping the pain in her stomach would cease, and Michelle screamed in agony. Castro came back down the stairs and told Michelle, quote, "Shut the fuck up," and then he drug her back upstairs to her room.
My God.
Gina tried to comfort her and, you know, just tell her that you know, maybe this was for the best and maybe that, you know, she just wasn't meant to have his child, even though I know Michelle like wanted it so badly just to have that feeling of her Joey back and all of that.
Right.
But a few days later, Michelle sadly began to lose the baby and Castro took her down to the bathroom. Castro, quote unquote, allowed her to use an actual toilet. And she sat there and cried. She felt the baby pass and turned around and scooped the fetus out of the water and held it in her arms. Castro barged in and slapped Michelle in the face for aborting his baby. He then took the baby away. That evening, Gina and Michelle laid in bed holding each other in silence.
I mean, we know he's a monster, but to do that and then to come and get mad at her.
Yeah. And that's what he did every time. I mean, it's, I don't know if it's to, you know, back to the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing, or if it's back to justifying his actions to make himself feel better about the horrible things he was doing to these women. But I mean, it was just,
yeah,
so fucked up. Like, beyond fucked up. There's not even a word that exists for how fucked up this specific situation, I feel like, was.
Yeah.
And the whole thing
is that's
just
terrible.
It's awful, yeah.
I'm glad she had Gina to,
to
be there with her.
To go through that alone. I mean, you know, sometimes that is a personal thing that you want to go through when it happens naturally, but to have that happen and be alone, like I am, I'm very glad that Gina was there to at least, you know, comfort her the best that she could.
Right. And I'm sure she was on top of the emotional pain. Like, I'm sure she was also in excruciating physical pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure she had nothing to help comfort that either.
Nope. No medication, no heating pad, no ice pack, no nothing. She was just left there to just deal with it like she was with every other thing.
Wow, she's so strong.
Yeah, she really is. So in March, so we're going to fast forward a couple of months to March of 2013, Castro had started bringing Michelle outside to, quote, help him dig a garden. After several days, Michelle realized that this hole was too deep for a garden, and she suspected that he was having her dig a grave. She felt as though her days in the house were numbered.
Oh my God, that gave me chills.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I felt like he had so much disdain for her. And at this point, she was just a problem for him. And he probably was trying to figure out a way to kill her or get rid of her or whatever, you know?
Right.
Because she did. She gave him a lot of shit. I mean, she mouthed back to him a lot more than I think the other two girls did. And, you know.
Yeah.
Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But, you know, she was probably more of a pain in the ass for him, which, good for her. Like, fuck him.
Right. Right. And, like, it, you know, he talked to both Amanda and Gina saying things like, when you get out, when this is over, when I let you go. But, you know, it wasn't big news that Michelle was missing. So, because she was a quote-unquote problem for him, like,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have been surprised if he would have killed her and let the other two go or whatever ended up happening. Like, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because during my research and all this, and it just, you know, I've said from the beginning, like, I feel protective over Michelle, and I have, like, I'm a little bit impartial to her, but it is so sad to see, like, how much coverage after, during, and after the fact that Amanda and Gina got. And Michelle just, I feel like she just got the short end of the stick her whole entire life. I mean,
yeah,
from birth, it seems like, but it just, it's so sad because she was in the house too. And like, she was raped and tortured and, you know, abused too. And
yeah,
but
yeah,
it's just, ugh.
I know. Okay, so April 2013, Castro actually showed Angie, his oldest daughter, a photo of Jocelyn. He claimed that it was his girlfriend's daughter, but Angie didn't really believe that he wasn't the father. She kept pushing him, kind of like, hey, this looks like my sister did when she was young. Like, but he finally was able to change the subject and nothing came of that. You know, even if they did think that it was his daughter, what would they, like,
what could
he's
they
telling them, I have a girlfriend, like, you know, they probably were like, oh, who is this girl? But, you know, I don't think they would have ever thought that.
Right.
Castro was continuing to get worn down, especially as Jocelyn was growing up. He was starting to see how difficult it was for her to be stuck in the house, even though he did take her out. And I think that that's what ultimately led to his slip up that led to their escape. So on May 6th, 2013, Amanda was 27 years old, Michelle was 32, and Gina was 24, which is just crazy to me because I'm 24.
I know.
So thinking about, like, missing that Gina out was my age and they were older than me.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh.
I know.
Jocelyn was a six-year-old with a wild imagination and a ton of energy all the time. So on that day, she ran up the stairs screaming, "Daddy's gone." And Amanda saw that the bedroom door was unlocked, so she was sure that Castro was still there because he never left the house without locking them in the bedroom. But this time was different. So you'll have to tune in next week for what I think will be the best episode yet.
Yes. Goosebumps.
I know.
So excited to tell it. I'm so excited.
It's going to be so good.
Yeah.
All right, you guys, thank you for listening.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Next time on Inhuman, the Monster of Cleveland. So Michelle remembers waking up on the morning of May 6th. Gina had already been awake and she was writing or drawing in her notebook. And Michelle sat up and began drawing in hers. She told Gina that she had a funny feeling, like a pit in her stomach she couldn't shake.
She also noticed that the radio wasn't on, which was odd because he would always leave it on super high volume anytime he left the house. So she was sitting there almost frozen, going back and forth thinking if this was a chance to escape or if it was a trick that Castro was playing. I'm going to read this part directly from the book because it's just like too powerful to paraphrase and explain otherwise. Quote, "Mom, please give me a sign." So Amanda is waving her arm out the door, yelling for help, and finally a man walking by heard her and went up to the porch.
So finally, Michelle let the cop put her down, and another cop told them to grab their belongings. They changed their clothes, and they gathered their notebooks, but Michelle stated in her book that she turned to Gina and asked, "Can you believe it? We're free." We just want to thank you guys so much for listening.
To see key photos from this episode, along with some behind the scenes, follow us over on Instagram at @inhuman_podcast.
If you're loving the podcast, let us know by subscribing and leaving us a review. It lets iTunes and other platforms see that you're enjoying our content so we can be discovered by new listeners.
We can't wait to bring you next week's episode. Until then, keep it human.